that just like the Lord, so very much like Jesus.
This is Larry Jones. You are listening to the Grace and Glory Hour of the Dyer Baptist Church with our co-pastors, David M. Atkinson and Dr. Lee Atkinson. We are coming to you from Dyer, Indiana. Our prayer is that you will be strengthened by the word today. Now, here is our pastor.
I'm excited about this new series because I think it's needful. And I want it to be practical. Hope you'll feel free to contribute, but it's not going to quite be the same style we've had for the last month or so where you have a handout and you're writing and then we're talking. We might do that again sometime, but for this evening, we'll take a little bit of a different approach. Have you ever been talking with somebody in a bad situation and you hear a phrase, something like, "This is not the life I planned on"? You're interacting with somebody and they are looking around themselves at devastation, not necessarily physical devastation, but problems in their life. And they say, "I never thought it would happen to me." Sometimes we say, "How did we end up here? Where did we go wrong?" And the sad thing is that a lot of the people with a lot of the problems in their lives have made the same mistakes that other people have made. And for anybody standing back and observing, if someone had been taking notes on their life, it wouldn't have taken much to predict this is where you're going to end up. Sometimes everybody could see it, but the person himself. But somehow we think we can tempt fate. We think that we can do the same things that other people do, but not have the same consequences that those people have. And that's just not the case. Does this look familiar to anyone? Should look familiar to at least two people, maybe four. This is the Way to Pacific Garden Mission from Dyer. And the Godfreys and Dad and Mom and I were up at the mission to see the McNeil's celebration this past day. It was yesterday, wasn't it? And this is part of the way to get there. That's a lot of lanes. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. I don't know. Close to 10 lanes or so of traffic. This is on I-94 when it goes due north and then it starts to curve around the city a little bit. You're in the area of around exit 53, and there's just a whole lot of roads going on, and you go over and you go under and you go sideways. Have you ever been in that area and been in the wrong lane? That's exciting. Or have you ever been in that area and you think there's 10 lanes of traffic and none of them is moving? Why is that? How can there be this much room and nobody's going anywhere? Even if there are two car accidents, they can't be blocking all 10 lanes. But they seem to. Sometimes we've been up to Chicago to do this or that, and you make just one wrong turn, and you end up somewhere you did not want to be. And you ask yourself, where did we go wrong? The thing is, when I've gotten... And my premise is that rarely have I been lost. I may not be where I want to go, but I'm not lost. But there are times when I'm truly lost and I don't know where I am. And when we're in those positions, often we don't know how we got there. Have you ever been in that position where you don't know where you are and you don't know how you got there? Others may have seen that, oh, that's the wrong place, you should have turned there. But you thought everything was just fine. And by the time you realize there is a problem, how many of you had this happen? You're driving along on the freeway, and by the time you realize you're not in the right lane, it's too late to do anything about it. And you're driving along and say, hey, look, family, there's our exit. That's the one we wanted, right there. Usually, you can find a trucker nearby on which to blame it. But it's often best, instead of getting yourself in that position, to anticipate these problem spots. The scripture says, I think of it in a case like this, there's a way which seemeth right unto a man, but the end thereof are the ways of death. You might think you're in the right lane. You might think you're on a shortcut to get to the mission, but you're not on the right path. When I knew we were going up to Chicago, I spent quite a bit of time on Google Maps looking at different possible routes. If we end up going this way, these are some street names I should be looking for. I should generally be turning left. I should be generally going north. If we don't go that way, if we go this way, I'm going to want to look for these kind of streets and exits. And actually, by God's grace, and with a little help from Garmin, we made it off just fine yesterday, didn't we? But had we no GPS and had I done no advanced planning, we might have gotten there right as the ceremony ended. But because I knew I was heading into a confusing area, I thought, let me do some study. And all of this is to kind of lay the background for why we're doing what we're doing here. When we look at Bible characters who have messed up their lives, it's a good idea to ask ourselves, how did they get there? Where was the confusing area where they took a wrong turn? Here's another illustration to try to help make it clear. And then recognize that. Can you see it from back there? This is the road you can barely see off to the right is Route 41. And that's the north side of 41 where you see the parking lot. And at the back is a restaurant called La Carreta, which is Spanish for wagon or something like that. And they have a wagon out front. It's a Mexican restaurant. And they have pretty good food. They're pretty fast at lunch. Lunch is more affordable than dinner, but I would recommend it. Well, I was to meet a gentleman from church there one time. We were going to discuss some things. And I was heading down that bridge on 41 past Home Depot when you're going north. And there's a turn lane. And I saw the restaurant, and I saw that driveway to turn. And I turned. And see the little new asphalt part there on that driveway off to the right? Do you see where that road goes? That is a road to nowhere. And it was the kind of thing when I made the turn, I realized I had turned too early. I was stuck. And I can't remember if I was in the truck or the van. I think I was in the van. The truck's really hard to do a 3-point turn in. It like does a 19-point turn. It's just kind of long. And I turned, and there wasn't like I could go around the block or anything. It was a dead end, if I recall correctly. And I'm just stuck there, so I'm having to do this turn and hope nobody wants to come. So I finally got out and got back on Indianapolis, and you have to go all the way down by the entrance to, past the Sprint store and kind of over the entrance to Lowe's, that area. And then you have to drive through like 2 or 3 parking lots to get there. Well, as it turned out, I think I was there before the guy I was meeting. And so I don't know if you see, there's only like one car in the parking lot. So I don't know when Google took this satellite image, but it must have been morning time. And I was parked right about where they were, waiting for my partner to come. And you know what happened while I was parked right there facing Indianapolis? Somebody else did the same thing. I was feeling rather spiritual at the time, and I wasn't laughing. I was thinking, how can I warn them? How can I go out and tell them, it's okay, I did it too. Yeah, you just do a 3-point turn and you'll be all right. But I saw them, and I knew what they were thinking, because I'd been there just a few minutes before. How much better would it have been if that driver could have learned from my mistake and not did the same thing that I did? But too often, we just all go around making the same mistakes. Think of the people whose lives are messed up that you know right now. Most of them probably made at least one out of about half a dozen common mistakes. They may have made all six of those half dozen common, but it's common errors that derail people, isn't it? It's not a surprise that, oh, they did that and their life got messed up. So what I would like us to do is take a look at Scripture, because people are really all quite similar. Whether it's now or 1,000 years ago or 3,000 years ago, people are just about the same. And the wrong turns that I am vulnerable to making have probably already been made by someone else. Listen, none of us is going to live long enough to learn everything the hard way. Do you want to learn everything the hard way? That is, by making the mistake yourself? Let's see if we can be wise and receive instruction from Scripture and learn from someone else's mistakes, because the Bible gives us very realistic, harsh even, descriptions of people, their lives, the good, the bad, and the ugly. And if we will learn from those examples, it will keep us from having to make all those mistakes ourselves, if we'll really take the lessons to heart. So, the Bible study method is this. Find somebody in the Bible whose life is really messed up, and then back up and find out why. The Bible says that all Scripture is profitable. Those stories about those sad lives aren't there just to make us sad. They aren't there to make the person look dumb or to make God look mean. They're there for our instruction. They're there to help us learn a thing or two. And let's come, willing and ready to learn. Let's retrace the steps of some of these characters. And then once we know the dangerous fork in the road, the dangerous path that they took that led them to destruction, we can be especially careful and look forward, not maybe that exact thing, but a form of that same thing that could lead us to a similar end. Does that make sense? So that's our introduction. Where did we go wrong? Let's look at the people in the Bible. And I guess this is foundational, okay? We have to accept this premise. Those bad guys in the Bible are not all that different from me. The homeless guy on the street, even if there's a self-righteous part of us that tends to say, well, they deserve it. They shouldn't have started drinking in the first place. Or the person who's guilty of crime and sent to prison and their children are separated from them. And we think, oh, how could they do that? Listen, you're not as different from them as you think you are. We're all the same. We have the same clay feet and the same deceitful heart. So if this series is going to benefit us, we have to be humble enough to say, I'm capable of that. Is that natural for us? I tend to think I'm really different from the people that we're going to study about. But I'm not. And recognizing that, and then being careful because I'm just like them can really, really help us. You ready for the first character? Starts with an A. Who's our first train wreck example? What do you think? Adam's a good start. Can't go back much farther than that. That's not who I picked tonight. Didn't pick him either. Lots of bad A guys. Animal, vegetable, or mineral? How about Achan? Turn to Joshua 7, please. Joshua 7. our approach then is going to be kind of start at the end and work backwards. So as we're in Joshua chapter 7, first question we'll ask is, where did he end up? What was Achan's finishing line? What was the mess that he got himself into? Then we'll back up and ask the question, where did he go wrong? How did he end up in the mess that he was in? So come to the end of the chapter, chapter 7, verse 24, and let's see where Achan ended up. And Joshua and all Israel with him took Achan, the son of Zerah, and the silver, and the garment, and the wedge of gold, and his sons and his daughters, and his oxen, and his asses, and his sheep, and his tent, and all that he had. And they brought them unto the valley of Achor. And Joshua said, why hast thou troubled us? The Lord shall trouble thee this day. And all Israel stoned him with stones and burned them with fire after they had stoned them with stones. And they raised over him a great heap of stones unto this day. So the Lord turned from the fierceness of his anger, wherefore the name of that place was called the Valley of Achor unto this day. Where did Achan end up? Well, first of all, he ended up a thief and a deceiver. He had stolen, he had taken something that wasn't his. And most of you here tonight are church members. Some of you have been church members in good standing for many years. And it's easy to think, well, I would never become a thief. I would never actually steal. Maybe not. Maybe. Achan was also a deceiver. Earlier in the text, when the Lord is telling Joshua why they were defeated at Ai, he said, they dissembled also. To dissemble is to deceive. Later in Achan's confession, he'll say, I hid it. These are all words about deception, aren't they? So he became a deceiver. He became a thief. Do you suppose that he had been a thief all of his life? We don't really know, do we? He could have had a tendency where when Achan bumped into you, people checked for their wallet. I don't know. He could have been someone that had been a little shady in his business dealings, you know, for years. Or it may be that he'd never really done anything like this before. But I'm sure his parents, when they gave birth to him, didn't think, boy, I hope our son grows up to be a thief. And I'm sure as he was going through his maturation, young adulthood, that I don't want to be known as an honest man. I want to just take things that don't belong to me. I don't think most people intend or plan to become a thief, but they do. He ended up a thief and a deceiver. He ended up responsible for the death of 36 countrymen. Turn back to the beginning of the chapter, verse 5. To give us the chronological setting, remember the children of Israel had gone through the wilderness. Moses is gone now. It's Joshua and the people. They're up for their first big battle, and it's Jericho. And God says, this is what we're going to do. You're going to march around the city. They do that, and it's going to be a great victory. But God says, I don't want you to take anything that's valuable. That's going to be for my treasury. That's going to be for my house. And they defeat Jericho and everything goes great. They're feeling pretty good about themselves. They went up against a AAA type school the first time and they won. Now there's this little country bumpkin school and they're up against them and they think, we can handle this. We don't even need to send the whole army. But you remember what happened. Look at verse 3. The spies come back to Joshua and said unto him, let not all the people go up, but let about 2,000 or 3,000 men go up and smite Ai, and make not all the people to labor thither, for they are but few. So they went up thither of the people, about 3,000 men, and they fled before the men of Ai. And the men of Ai smote of them about 36 men, for they chased them from before the gate even to Shebarim, and smote them in the going down. Wherefore the hearts of the people melted and became as water. 36 men died that day. On a day that was supposed to be a day of victory, on a day that was supposed to be an easy win, not only did they not win, 36 of them died. We know now that it was all because of Achan. Do you think when Achan stole those things, he thought about the fact that he was going to be responsible for the death of 36 men? He was going to single-handedly create 36 widows? And who knows how many orphans? That was all on him. That's where he ended up. He ended up publicly humiliated. Notice back in verse, I think it's 24, that this wasn't a private execution. Joshua and all Israel with him took Achan. Remember, this is a large group. This is like 2 million plus people. Talk about a spectator. Talk about a spectacle. It says all Israel took this guy and his stuff. Publicly humiliated. Embarrassed? How do you think he felt about that? How do you think he felt about the 36 widows that were part of this? What a terrible spot in which to be. He was unable to enjoy what he had wanted so badly. That Babylonish garden isn't doing him much good now. The gold, he could have been right next to it, dead. He ended up unable to enjoy what he wanted and devastating his own family. I worded it that way because there is some ambiguity in Scripture, and scholars are not united about whether the family was also stoned and burned or just Achan and the animals. It says the first time they stoned him, and the second time it says they stoned them. One pronoun is singular, one is plural. It says they burned them, but could that be a reference to the animals? We don't know. In either case, God is just. If I had to say, I think probably the whole family was executed. Because when God declares what the punishment is going to be earlier in the chapter, he says, take the man and all that is his. And his family would qualify as his. But whether his family died that day or whether his family was on the front row of the execution, in either case, his family was devastated. What a terrible place to be. Nobody sets out eager to devastate their family, but it happens. He devastated his family. He was unable to enjoy what he wanted, publicly humiliated, had the blood of 36 men on his hands. It became a famous bad example. How many of you want to? I want to be the one that they say, don't be like him. Do you really want to be known as the one that you don't want to be? I mean, some people, their name has become a symbol of what you don't do, right? So you Judas. And so the name Judas has become a verb to betray. Is that what you want? Oh, you're such a Benedict Arnold. Right? Because notice there in verse 26, the valley was called the Valley of Achor. Why? Achor means trouble. And Joshua said, why have you troubled Israel? Now the Lord's going to trouble you. And we're going to make a memorial and we're going to call this valley trouble after you. And it says they made a huge heap of stones. And whether it was just Achan and his stuff or Achan and his family and his stuff, the point is there was so much rubble there. It became a memorial just in the stoning pile. And anyone who walked by would say, what happened there? That is not a natural rock formation. Well, that's the Valley of Achor. You never heard about the Valley of Achor? Let me tell you about the Valley of Achor. And they told him, and you bet they probably told him about the 36 men and the terrible things that happened at Ai. Oh, what a bleak picture. And remember, this could be me. This could be any of us. I know that some of us have been following the Lord for a long time. But you don't have to ask far or ask long to hear stories of people who were, quote, mature Christians who turned down a bad road. It happens. If we don't want to end up like Achan, let's retrace his steps and figure out where did he go wrong? How did he end up in the mess that he's in? So we're in Joshua chapter 7. And we're asking ourselves this question. Where did he go wrong? How did it get to this point? Now, I deliberately went out of order and looked at the end first. Now come with me earlier in the chapter, Joshua chapter 7. As I read, I'm going to ask you to really focus and ask yourself this question. Where did he go wrong? What did he do that he shouldn't have done? And if you want to jot a couple words in your own margin or on your own note paper, we'll compare lists, okay? I have about 5 or 6 things that I think he did wrong that led him to that destructive end. You see if you can find where he went wrong. Joshua chapter 7, I think I'll start reading verse 1. I may not read the entire chapter, though. The children of Israel committed a trespass in the accursed thing. For Achan, the son of Carmi, the son of Zabdi, the son of Zerah, the son of Judah, took of the accursed thing, and the anger of the Lord was kindled against the children of Israel. And Joshua sent men from Jericho to Ai, which is beside Beth-Aven, on the east side of Bethel, and spake unto them, saying, go up and view the country. Okay, and now we come to the spying part that we talked about earlier. But let's not rush past verse 1. It says, Israel committed a trespass in taking of the accursed thing. What does it mean to trespass? Go on someone else's property, right? I remember as a kid, my first recollections of a no trespassing sign were in some woods that were apparently owned by some private owner. And my friends owned woods next to that. And, you know, what's the good of being in the woods if you can't push the boundaries a little bit? Go exploring and see how far you can go and what you can see that you've never seen before. And so you're tramping through the woods, and it's all woods. And then before you know it, you look up, and lo and behold, there's signs that say, posted, keep out, no trespassing. Keep out you. I remember that. I don't know if this was in South Carolina. I don't know if that's a redneck thing or not. Have you ever seen a sign that says, keep out you? That's what these signs say, keep out you. I guess it was so, you know, because isn't this true when you see a no trespassing sign? You think it means everybody else? Well, I'm not really trespassing. I'm just going over here. Other people are trespassers, not me. You know you rationalize like that. So this person, he said, keep out you. I don't want you trespassing. To trespass means to go across a border into a place where you're not supposed to be. It means to have something that's not yours. Well, this goes back to the command in chapter 6. Remember the command? Chapter 6, verse 18. They're about to take Jericho, which was a big, rich city. And typically in those days, when there was war, when there was battle, if you beat the bad guys, you got to take their stuff. If they had money, if they had cattle, if they had nice things, they were dead. They didn't need him anymore, so you took him. That was just what you did. But God said in Joshua chapter 6, verse 18, and ye in any wise keep yourselves from the accursed thing, lest ye make yourselves accursed when ye take of the accursed thing, and make the camp of Israel a curse and trouble it. But all the silver and gold and vessels of brass and iron are consecrated unto the Lord. They shall come into the treasury of the Lord. So God on that day set up a boundary. And he said, these things are my property. That is where you need to stay, on the other side of the line. You see, but verse 1 of chapter 7 says that somebody trespassed. They crossed the boundary line. The first thing that Achan did that led him to that terrible place of destruction is he disregarded God's command. Doubtless thinking that it really wasn't that important. It was kind of harmless. I mean, really, does God's treasury really need this Babylonian garment? A Babylonian garment, they were famous for beautiful robes and clothing. What does God need with a beautiful robe? Ah, he won't miss one beautiful robe. What difference does it make? It's not like I'm, you know, killing anybody. It's not like I'm, you know, lying. It's not like I'm bowing down to a false god. I'm just keeping a nice piece of clothing. What does God need that for? And gold and silver. There's gold and silver everywhere. They destroyed the entire city. I'm just a little bar of gold. What difference does that make? I mean, he's God. If he wants gold, he can get gold. Can you see how if you were in Achan's position, you might think that this rule didn't really matter? I think oftentimes when we disobey, we tell ourselves that the rule doesn't matter. First. And that's how we talk ourselves into doing it. Why does any rule matter? And I would like you to answer. I know sometimes it's rhetorical and you're like, does he want me to say anything? Yeah, I want you to say something. What makes any rule, law, or guideline significant? Okay, it sets a boundary, yes? Mm-hmm. Okay, because the person has authority that comes from God that set the boundary. Very good. It is for our good. Yeah, right. Yeah, it's to protect us. It's good for us. Yeah, great answers. Let me ask you a question. If you have a 3-year-old child and your child says to you, Mommy, don't come in my room. Is that an important rule? It's not really, is it? Can you go in the child's room? You can. Because God didn't delegate any authority to the 3-year-old, okay? Except maybe over the goldfish, I'm not sure. But the weight or the meaning or the significance of a rule is determined by the one that set it. Because if Mommy says to the 3-year-old, this is my room, don't come in my room, that's a little different story, isn't it? Because God did give Mommy authority over the 3-year-old. And so her rule matters a little bit more. So is there like, you know, an electric fence or something under the floor and the child's going to die if they walk into Mommy's room? No. Is there some moral absolute that is just earth-shattering, and if the child crosses that line, the universe will convulse? No. The only reason it's important for the child not cross the line is because Mommy said so. The importance, the weight of a rule comes not from the rule itself, but from the authority of the person that made it. So whether the rule is don't come into Mommy's room, or whether the rule is don't turn the TV on without asking, or whether the rule is don't play in the street, all the rules matter because they come from Mommy, not because of the rule itself. Does that make sense? So Achan may have well thought, it's harmless. What's the big deal if I take a robe and a gold thing? What's the big deal? It's not a big deal. God didn't need the robe. God didn't need the gold. That's not what matters. What matters is that God said so. And whatever command it is that I'm tempted to disobey, I need not tell myself, well, this command doesn't matter. I don't see any dangerous consequences. I don't see why it's a problem, so why shouldn't I? If it doesn't make sense to me, then I'm not bound by the regulation. That's the way Achan thought, and that's the way I think. And it's wrong. By the way, Achan thought, what's the harm? But what was the harm? It was that whole previous slide, wasn't it? Including the 36 dead men. And so you may think it's okay to break this rule, whatever it is that God has told us. But it's not okay, because it's a rule from God. I don't know where you're tempted to compromise. I really don't want to, actually. But I have a suspicion that each of us has an area where we know where the boundary is. I mean, was God unclear about what they were supposed to do in Jericho? Was it confusing or hard to understand? It's pretty black and white. Don't take the stuff. And I have an idea that all of us have at least one area where God has clearly spoken in His Word and says, do this or don't do that. And we find some sophisticated mental gymnastic way of telling ourselves, you know what, it's really kind of harmless. I'll just go ahead. I don't think there's a problem with this. But there is. So where did he go wrong? He disregarded God's command. Okay, we're back in chapter 7. We read verses 1 and 2. Earlier we looked at the spying story in verses 3 through 5. Verses 6 and following, Joshua now is grieving because of the loss of the battle against Ai. In verse 10, God tells Joshua what to do about it. So read with me now in verse 10, Joshua chapter 7, verse 10. And the Lord said unto Joshua, get thee up! Wherefore liest thou thus upon thy face? He was grieving, he was mourning on his face. Israel hath sinned. And they have also transgressed my covenant, which I commanded them, for they have even taken of the accursed thing, and have also stolen and dissembled also, and they have put it even among their own stuff. Therefore the children of Israel could not stand before their enemies, but turned their backs before their enemies, because they were accursed. Neither will I be with you any more, except ye destroy the accursed from among you. We've mentioned this before, but I want to make sure it goes down on the list. Achan hid his actions. It said there in verse 11, they've stolen and dissembled also. To dissemble, it's like, you know the word resemble. That means this looks like that again. Resemble, to look again like something else. So to dissemble is to like make something have an appearance that's not real, to look like something that it's not. Achan took the stuff, dug a hole under his tent, and buried it so it would look like he didn't take anything. It's not like he took the robe and, you know, hung it up outside of his tent. Look what I just got. He didn't go parading through the town the next day. Look, I just got a new robe. Where'd you get it? Oh, somewhere. He didn't, you know, go to the market or whatever they had in that time and say, hey, I've got some gold, I want to buy something. Where'd you get all that money from all of a sudden, Achan? Well, you know, I just found it lying around the tent. No, he dissembled. He acted as though he didn't have anything. He acted as though he had obeyed. He hid what he had really done. And boy, I heard this. I remember hearing this as a kid. But it still helps to catch me when I'm doing wrong. When I have to try to make sure that nobody knows what I'm doing, chances are I shouldn't be doing what I'm doing. If you have to look over your shoulder, if you have to remember now, how was this so I can make it look that way again later? How can I make it seem as though this never happened or I was never here or whatever, whatever? I mean, unless you're planning for a surprise birthday party, you should ask yourself, why am I thinking these things? Why am I wanting to appear other than what I am? Why am I so concerned with who's seeing this or who's hearing this? If it's right, chances are you're not going to be tempted to hide it. But if you have to dissemble, if you have to hide what you're doing, you might be doing wrong. So he hid his actions. Now, I continue to be astonished at verses 16 through 19. Verses 13 and following, Joshua is being told by God what to do. God says, Joshua, the reason you guys lost was because you sinned, you've transgressed, you've dissembled, you've hidden the stuff, and I'm not going to be with you anymore until you take care of it. Here's how you're going to take care of it. And he tells him what to do. In verse 16, Joshua starts to do it. So Joshua rose up early in the morning, presumably the next day after they lost the battle. So emotionally, where is the nation of Israel right now? Yeah, they should be pretty raw emotionally. They're wondering what's going on. How did this happen? Why did this happen? Surely some of them are asking questions like, was it something I did? So Joshua rose up early in the morning and brought Israel by their tribes, and the tribe of Judah was taken. Now, it doesn't say that Joshua said why he did this. But if I'm an Israelite, and we've just lost a battle to a tiny town after we, like, hands down destroyed a big city, and the next thing I know, my leader is, like, bringing the whole country up in front, and he's picking people out, I'm going to be scratching my head and saying, what is this all about? Especially when is my tribe that's taken. 12 tribes, and mine's one of the one that got selected. Interesting. So the tribe of Judah was taken. Verse 17, and he, Joshua, brought the family of Judah, and he took the family of the Zarhites. And he brought the family of the Zarhites man by man. Does this take a while? This is like process of elimination. This is dragging on. There's a crowd gathering. They're watching, wondering what's going on. And the son of Zerah, of Zabdi, the son of Zerah of the tribe of Judah was taken. Sorry, I skipped a verse there. 18, he brought his household man by man, and Achan, the son of Carmi, the son of Zabdi, the son of Zerah of the tribe of Judah was taken. I don't know how long this took, but I think it took a while. And the whole time this is happening, each level, I mean, how many tiers were there? About 4 tiers there. There was the tribe, and then, you know, this level, and this level, and this level. And that whole time, every time, Achan's knowing, I'm still in. I'm not off the hook yet. And every level, he had an opportunity, didn't he? What could he have done? Stop, stop, we don't need to go any farther. It's me. I did it. It's my fault. I'm guilty. I disobeyed. He doesn't do that. Achan does confess, but only when he has no other choice. Have we ever seen that happen in our real lifetime? A lot of people only confess when they're caught. And that's not really much of a confession, is it? How did Achan end up in that terrible position he was in? One important thing is that he did not give in until he was caught. I don't know. Hypotheticals are dangerous. But what if, what might have happened if as soon as the army came back defeated from Ai, Achan had realized, oh, God said it was accursed stuff and I took it. No wonder we lost. It must be me. And he'd run to Joshua and say, Joshua, I'm sorry. Forgive me. Punish me as you will. It's my fault. Maybe there would have been a little mercy mixed with the justice. Even if the next morning he'd been sleepless all night, guilty with the blood of those men on his hands and sleeping literally right over the stolen goods and tossing and turning throughout the night, and in the morning run to Joshua, and Joshua, it was me, I'm sorry. Or when he could tell something was going on and the tribe of Judah was taken, but no. He played the game as long as he could. He hid and he hid and he hid. When we do wrong, that's human. We're sinners. Make it right as soon as possible. Confess it. Admit it. Don't be so proud like you think no one's ever going to find out. Don't be so proud that you think, well, people will be shocked that I did something wrong. No, they know better. They know you. So just go ahead and get it over with and admit what you are. In his confession, such as it is, he said in verse 21, "When I saw the spoils, among the spoils, a goodly Babylonish garment, 200 shekels of silver and a wedge of gold of 50 shekel weight," he says, "I saw them." Understand what was going on when he saw this stuff. Battle. They are in the middle of a war, if you will. There's people running around everywhere with swords and who knows what farming instruments they had turned into weapons. There's blood-curdling screams. There's yelling. There's people moaning and dying. There's a wall that's fallen down. There's a battle going on. And something catches his eye. And what had God told them? It's not for you. But he says, "I saw it." And what's it pretty easy to infer? There's a difference between seeing and looking, isn't there? Right? Like I can kind of see the rope there out of my peripheral vision, but I'm not looking. Like if the rule is you can't have any rope, okay, I'm fine. I'm not tempted to take the rope. Oh, that's a nice rope. Would you look at that? It's braided. It's got this nice little band at the end. Ooh. Ooh. Yeah, I thought it would feel like that. That's a long rope too, isn't it? I could do. Yeah. You see, he didn't just see it, did he? He looked at it. And he began to consider. Achan got into trouble by looking at what he was not supposed to have. And I don't care if it's a car or a job or an outfit or a person of the opposite gender or whatever it is. Something that you're not supposed to have, stop looking at it. Something you're not supposed to eat. Because you realize, you know what, this is a temptation, and I know I will fall into the sin of gluttony if I buy the Twinkies and set them on my counter and look at them. There is no sin in buying Twinkies, but gluttony is a sin. So there kind of is a sin in buying Twinkies when it's your weakness, isn't it? Because the Bible says, make no provision for the flesh. How about that? I just meddled with your grocery shopping. You didn't think you were getting that in church on Wednesday night, did you? And everyone's thinking, well, yes, if someone has a problem with gluttony, they shouldn't buy Twinkies, but I don't have a problem with gluttony. That's right. But you get what I'm saying. Don't look. Just don't look. And then he allowed his desires to determine his actions. He says, "I looked, I saw it, and I coveted it. I wanted it. And then I took it and I hid it." It's bad to be tempted. Okay, if the rope is against the rules, it's bad when I first look at, oh man, I haven't had a rope like that in a long time. Oh, I would love to have a rope like that. That's bad to think that way, isn't it? But it's worse to act on my desire, isn't it? I'm going to be tempted. Being tempted is not the same as sinning. Don't let your desires determine your every action. Okay, if I'm going to go with the Twinkies illustration to be kind of serious and kind of silly at the same time. Okay, so we've established that for you to sit there and stare at a box of Twinkies, if it would be sin for you to eat the whole box of Twinkies, and to stare at them would be a step towards sin, then it's bad for you to buy them. But does that mean that you don't go to the grocery store where they are? Probably not. So what if you're going down the aisle and they don't have it in the snacks aisle, they have it on the end cap. You didn't even go down the Little Debbie aisle or the hostess aisle. You're just going down the main aisle and minding your own business, and there's the Twinkies. And your heart yearns for them. That's not good. But you keep that buggy moving. You go on down the aisle. It's bad to want it. It's worse to put it in your cart. Right? So let's try to stop it at the looking level. But if you're tempted, if you covet, stop. It's bad to covet somebody else's automobile. It's worse to go out and buy one that you can't afford. It's bad to be tempted to look at somebody that's not your spouse. It's worse to just park there and keep looking. Do you understand? Don't let your desires determine your actions. Wanting it is bad. Doing it is worse. Achan ended up in a terrible spot. And the really disturbing thing is that every one of these things that got him where he went are things that I face, things that I struggle with. And it's easy to think, well, I'll never end up like Achan. But you don't know that. Let's stop it before it starts. Let's obey God regardless of how harmless the command, how unimportant the command seems. Let's not be deceitful. Let's not hide our actions. When we've done wrong, let's confess it quickly. Don't linger in your looking. And don't give in to your desires. Deny yourself. Do what you should.
Isn't that just like the Lord? So very much like Jesus.
Thank you for joining us today. We'd love to hear from you. Our email address is graceglory7@juno.com. graceglory7@juno.com. Pastor David M. Atkinson also has a ministry on Facebook and invites you to connect with him there. Now, until the next time, remember to walk softly with the Lord.